Well, as the nervous wait is underway to see whether the first community case of COVID for 2 months in Northland can be quickly contained, again raising questions over whether the country's border and MIQ system is tight enough, health officials are pushing ahead with preparations for a mass vaccination program to begin in the second half of the year. This includes recruiting and training thousands of people who'll be needed. Up to 3,000 more healthcare staff are needed. The call is out for retired workers and even medical trainees. MedSafe approval for the vaccine is also still pending. Meantime, the existing national vaccination register is midway through a digital overhaul. So is New Zealand ready? Last month, in a northeast corner of the UK, a military-style effort was completed by multiple coordinated agencies to make sure eligible care home residents received the vaccine. They managed it in 2 weeks, and it's thought to be the only part of England to have achieved this. Shortly we'll hear from Dr. Jane Carey, who was project lead in Newcastle's Mammoth Coordinated Approach to get all home care residents vaccinated. We'll also hear from Loretta Roberts, who's manager of New Zealand's Immunisation Advisory Centre. But first, we welcome immunologist Helen Patousis-Harris, who says we should be prepared for some hitches in our programme. She's also calling for clarity around timing of administration of the vaccine. Good morning, Helen. Welcome to 9 to Noon. Can you hear me, Helen?
Yep.
Good morning.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Great. Good morning and welcome. With what is happening around the world at the moment, including some of the hiccups and delays we're seeing in places like the United States, can we be confident of our vaccines arriving at the times they're expected to?
I think we can be reasonably confident, but of course, you can only really count them when they land. So that is, of course, always going to be one of the risks to not, meeting your goals. But I'd like to think it was a relatively small risk.
So what is expected as of now? Let's recap. What are we expecting to arrive and when?
So the first cab off the rank, the first vaccines to arrive will be the first lot of the Pfizer vaccines, the RNA vaccines, and those ones are initially immediately destined for those frontline people and working from there through those priority groups. There'll be further deliveries of those over the next following weeks. And then we've got the next ones to arrive, I think, expected to be the AstraZeneca viral vector. And also the Novavax vaccine, and then just after that, the Janssen. Now, we don't have yet the data on the Janssen and the Novavax in terms of how effective they're likely to be, but that's coming just in maybe this week for Janssen, very, very soon. So that's what's sort of scheduled.
So at the moment, the earliest we are expecting vaccination to happen here is border workers and key frontline staff in April. And even that, is subject to the vaccines arriving as expected. Again, criticism that this is just too slow when you look at Australia endeavouring to bring forward its vaccination of such frontline workers.
Yeah, but Australia aren't actually vaccinating anybody right now. They also don't have the vaccine right now. So, how much of that is actually doable? I mean, you mentioned some of the hitches that are happening overseas. I think we probably, we have the potential to be in a better place to roll this out smoothly. Are we ready right now? No. But can we be ready and can we do it? I think so, yes.
For the bulk of the population, the phrase so far has been used the second half of the year. Are you any clearer? Are you hearing any more about how this mass program might begin and when?
Yeah, I mean, I think the sense is that those frontline actually sort of in March, and really by the looks of it, by May, but maybe a bit before, you're really seeing those doses going out into, having 1 or 2 million people.
So the latest you are hearing is perhaps slightly more optimistic than what is being officially stated.
It's about the two things, about that stuff landing in April, the bigger volumes landing ready for April, and also, of course, MedSafe having the data that they've needed and been able to approve it for use.
So if we be optimistic and the mass vaccination program can begin, say, by May, if the vaccines arrive, yep. What are you hearing about the numbers that can be done and how quickly?
I think if you have the manpower, and Loretta, of course, will talk to this more, but if you have the manpower on the ground incredibly quickly, I mean, we've seen what can be achieved. An example was our flu season last year, where I think there were about 1.7 million people vaccinated in about 6 weeks. And so you can go hell for leather if you and these guys, these vaccinators can be unbelievably efficient, and I think you're going to hear about that from also from the UK. So you've just got to get them on the ground and ready to go.
What is the story with the National Immunisation Register, by the way, which is obviously pre-existing? It handles a number of information about a number of diseases we vaccinate against on a mass basis. Do you have concerns about its ability to handle something of this scale?
Oh, you know, that thing sort of rolled over and sort of died, really. I mean, it was really past its use-by date. So they've got a new one to replace it, which sounds amazing. Now, whether they'll have all the desirable components of that up and going in time, of course, is the question. The main thing is, I mean, you've absolutely got to record every dose that goes in. So how far they've got with all the additional functions of this new system, I guess, remains to be seen. Maybe Loretta can shed some light on it. But, yep, that is also one of the potential hitches, I think. You've got to have that up and going really smoothly.
Explain more about recording every dose and, I presume, information needing to be linked up nationally.
So I mean, if you don't record a dose, you cannot follow up rigorously to ensure that, you know, the safety of the vaccine. You can't assess the effectiveness of the vaccine, and you also can't really monitor how much you're giving, so you don't have a denominator, if you like. So really it stops you from doing any robust assessment on these sort of outcomes for the vaccine.
Are you by and large optimistic, Helen? And, you know, we have seen academics and health experts be pretty forthright where they think we have weaknesses in the system. They believe it's their job to be. When it comes to this stage of fighting the pandemic, where do you sit on the scale of optimism about our preparedness?
I have some optimism. I've seen some pretty impressive plans and logistics getting underway. I have concerns about some of the, you know, the tinkering around the edges bits. I think we're not ready for in some aspects. And a lot of this, I mean, other countries are very similar, I think. You know, you focus, put all your focus on actually developing and getting this vaccine, but less has been considered when it does come to deploying and beyond the deployment of the vaccine. For example, having your enhanced systems for safety monitoring, which is desirable under these circumstances, your ability to then assess how successful this is being, things like that need to be prepared for, you know, I would say now, but earlier would have been better, because you can't just snap your fingers and make these things happen when you want them. So I think, yeah, a bit more preparedness needs to happen still.
Thank you. Stay with us. If you could, that's Helen Patousis-Harris. Well, let's bring in Loretta Roberts now, manager of the country's Immunisation Advisory Centre, overseeing the vaccinators' training. Loretta, welcome to 9 to Noon.
Morena, Catherine.
Let's pick up first on some of what we've been discussing about the logistics, and then we'll talk about the staffing and the training. Can you explain exactly the logistical steps involved in the program as they are ready now?
Sure. And there has been a lot of planning that's been going into place from sort of the end of 2020 and rapidly going forward. And as Helen said, you know, in our flu season last year, which was challenging during the lockdown period. We probably vaccinated about 1/5 of our population in about 8 weeks, and that's with our existing staff. I think in New Zealand we have actually a very robust vaccinated training program. We've had probably 20 years of a national program. We have national standards. We have, you know, everything in place to know who those people are and when they're training. So from my point of view, in terms of manpower and workforce, I think the planning's been, you know, very good.
So this is your particular area, right? Let's yes. look at it then in detail.
Sure.
How many short are you of the thousands of people able to deliver the vaccines?
So at the moment, we've done, you know, modelling and looking at the numbers of people. So since April 2020, the Ministry of Health, alongside Immunisation Advisory Centre, we have actually been actively growing the workforce. So we have had an online program with webinar support, and we've been targeting different groups to boost. And the aim has been to boost an extra 3,000 to 4,000. Now, those people include paramedics. We've got third-year nursing students, fourth, fifth and sixth-year medical students, enrolled nurses, registered nurses working in aged care. So we've gone to places where we know that we're going to have to vaccinate and have a larger pool of vaccinators. So as to date, we have about somewhere between 2,200 to 2,300 in that extra pool. And, you know, there are people coming into that training program every day at the moment. And then we have our traditional sort of workforce that is there. So we have what we call authorised vaccinators, and they are mainly primary healthcare nurses, public health nurses, occupational health who give vaccines, outreach immunisation nurses. So we know that we've got about 5,500 of those. The other thing New Zealand's been doing probably over the last 6 or 7 years is having pharmacists be able to vaccinate. So we've been working closely with Pharmaceutical Society New Zealand and getting lots of pharmacists on. We have about 1,600 of those. The next month we have 250 intern pharmacists who will be training basically over a period of 2 weeks. And then we have the other groups. So, for example, New Zealand Defence Force have 100 trained vaccinators, and they could possibly train more. And we have, like, medical practitioners who can vaccinate.
So how many more do you need between now and July?
Preferably, it would be good if we got, say, another 1,500.
Okay. Now, can we talk about their training? Because we heard in the news this morning the government's granted the COVID vaccine suppliers, Pfizer and BioNTech, indemnity from any claims which could arise from use of the vaccine. As you said, we're still awaiting MedSafe to approve their use here. But that is an indicator of the fact that these new vaccines for a new disease, or a different variant, certainly a virulent variant of a disease. What are the skills that the vaccinators need? Is it more than being able to take the cap off, clearly take the cap off a vial and inject? What are they being trained in, including in understanding what side effects there might be and what to look for?
Absolutely. So our training has a number of modules, but there are some things that are very important. So they do need to understand the vaccine. They need to understand how the vaccine works. And some of these vaccines are slightly different to vaccines that we've previously had. So that's important. And they need to understand how it works so that they can communicate that to the people they're vaccinating and why it's important to be vaccinated. And they need to understand the safety profile of that vaccine and also be able to communicate to their patient, you know, anything that the patient should be looking out for, and if it was untoward, what they should be doing to, you know, seek medical advice. So that's very important. They also need to understand, you know, the safety while they're vaccinating. So there's a number of health and safety processes in place to ensure that, you know, the vaccine is safe. The first vaccines that we have coming in, the Pfizer vaccine, it's a little different to what we would normally vaccinate with in New Zealand. So it's what we call a multi-dose vial. So you actually mix in the vaccine together and then you draw 5 doses of vaccine from that vial into a separate syringe. So there's a technique that we teach there. It's not that we haven't done this before. We did with some of the pandemic vaccine in 2009 that we used in New Zealand. So, and, you know, the training to do this is quite straightforward. So that's, you know, part of the training that we will focus on and making sure, again, that that's a technique where you have no chance of risking any infection or contamination of the vial.
You're also dealing, of course, with one of the vaccines requiring to be stored at incredibly low temperatures. And is that, how is that being managed again when it comes to the training of the staff?
So there's a very strong logistics team in the Ministry of Health, and the way this vaccine will be done is there will be limited people, so there's probably only going to be 3 main sites where that vaccine is stored at that minus 70 degrees. Now, the good thing is that once you take it out of the freezer, you can then, it thaws and it stays in our normal. So normally we'd look after a vaccine between 2 and 8 degrees. So once you take the vaccine out of the freezer, you can put it into your fridge between 2 and 8, and it can remain in that fridge for up to 5 days. So that technique will be just managed as the normal vaccinators, and those people working with the vaccine at minus 70 will be having specialist training.
That's the Pfizer. It's all we've got.
That's
until
the
June,
Pfizer,
isn't it? It's all we've got. So that first,
yes,
that first,
yes, that
round
first vaccine
will be, yep, for the border workers will be the Pfizer, which again makes this a significant logistical exercise in order to tick all these boxes. Oh, the question of, yep, tracking using the existing, mm-hmm, database, immunisation database, which, as we've heard, is transitioning into a much more modern digitised database. How does that fit in? Where does that interface, I guess, with the people giving the vaccinations, and where is that project at?
So I have been working, there's a team in the Ministry of Health working on a COVID immunisation register. And really all of us are working for a 1 March, so that we will be ready by 1 March, whether the vaccine is here or not. That's another thing, but that's our target. So they have built a COVID immunisation register, and it will be working and functioning. It's having some testing now with people who would be using it. And, you know, it will be a safe process in which to register the vaccine. And then the idea is that later on, the new national immunisation solution, which will be replacing the national immunisation register, will be built. And then the information from the COVID vaccines can be moved across into the new national immunisation solution.
So is this new platform not built yet?
No, the new platform is built. So the COVID immunisation register part,
right,
so like one module, it is built and it is being tested.
But when you said the national immunisation solution is still
that
to
is
be
not
built,
built,
what is,
yeah,
that? Please explain in more detail.
So that is the replacement for our, as Helen said, dying national immunisation register. That is the place where we have all of the vaccines for everybody under the age of 15 now. And we have a number of other vaccines that have been recorded on there, the HPV vaccines and vaccines that we give to pregnant women and influenza. So it's a very robust register now, but it needs, yeah, to be new.
So at the moment, will the vaccination register for this particular program stand alone and likely stand,
yes,
alone,
yes,
right through the process, to be honest?
Possibly, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
If the mass vaccinations, what do you see as the possible start date for the mass vaccinations? Could it be a little bit earlier than the second half of the year? Could it be May?
You know, it's hard to say. So just a comment first on the Pfizer vaccine. So when we are training for that, that vaccine, of course, we're working very closely with DHBs. That vaccine is only going to be delivered in the areas, of course, where there is, you know, quarantine workers, port workers, border workers, and high risk. So we actually are aiming to train 400 to 500 vaccinators for that, because it's a different vaccine and it's only going to be given, you know, there's only those limited number of doses. And then we will have another training module for everybody else who would be doing the mass vaccination. At the moment, you know, we are saying sort of May, June, everybody's saying mid-year. And as Helen said, you know, we don't know really until the data comes from the vaccines, so that it can be approved by MedSafe, and then the availability, of course, of access and shipping. We are looking at training certainly and being ready. So we would be training sort of the general vaccinators for those mass vaccinations probably about April. So
they'll be ready. But the question is whether the vaccines get here. And again, mm-hmm. when you see what is happening, for example, in the United States at the moment, where some states are vaccinating 1/7 of the people per day that they're supposed to be doing, and you are seeing people saying we ran out days ago, what are you hearing about the risks to little New Zealand getting the doses at the time it believed it had agreed to get them?
So really, I'm not hearing anything, because that's not the area that I'm working in. But we all do know that the demand for vaccine is high. I understand that a lot of the vaccine, you know, manufacturing plants are trying to produce as much vaccine as possible. But it's certainly an area for everybody, I think, that, you know, we need to be ready. We get everything in place to be ready, and we hope that the vaccine will get here as soon as it possibly can.
Loretta, thank you. Well, let's welcome Dr. Jane Carman, Clinical Director of Inner West Primary Care Network, which is in the UK. And as I mentioned earlier, she was project lead in Newcastle's mammoth coordinated approach to get all care home residents vaccinated in this area of northeast UK. That we'd manage it in 2 weeks. Welcome, Jane. Thanks for your expertise and your time.
Good morning. Pleased to be here.
Explain what your mission was and how it happened.
Well, we recognised that we had a huge job on our hands. We had to find a way of vaccinating our most vulnerable population as quickly as possible with this quite tricky vaccine, which is the Pfizer vaccine. Because at that time, we only had the Pfizer vaccine. We now have the some AstraZeneca as well, which is much, much easier. But when we first started out, we thought, we've got to get this this particular group, the care home residents and their carers, vaccinated as soon as possible. And as some of your earlier speakers have alluded to, it's very difficult. This Pfizer vaccine has to be used within, well, by the time we receive, it's got to be used within 3.5 days. So in order, and you get them in packs of 975 doses. So you've got to work fast and be efficient in managing to get them to the right people in the right way. So we were in quite a good position, because our vaccination program is usually done through primary care. And so all 31 practices in Newcastle across primary care networks had got together, and we've been working together for some time, and with the help of our local authority colleagues and our clinical commissioning group colleagues. So right across the board, we got a plan together about who we needed to vaccinate, which homes we needed to do, and we, as you said earlier, we'd had a kind of military organisation to get them out to the homes. So what we did is we had 7 teams going out to usually about maximum of 2 care homes per day per team. The team consisted of a doctor, a lot of them were general practitioners, but we did have secondary care physicians, anaesthetists, such like joining us as well. We were supported by specialist nursing team who are used to working in care homes. And we also had an administrator who was, you know, who were medical students or geography students or other volunteers. So each of those 7 teams went out with the Pfizer vaccine, supported by a logistical team who were, you know, fabulous. They organised getting us extra vaccine, any more supplies that were needed. So it was a big team response.
And it was achieved in 2 weeks. Jane, it was completed
it was
in 2 weeks?
Actually, initially achieved over 5 working days, actually.
Wow.
For the original ones. We're still picking up some of the, because we obviously couldn't do everybody, because as you know, we have outbreaks in this country, and there was some reasons why we couldn't vaccinate every person in a particular care home. Say that they tested positive or symptomatic of COVID or too unwell, or their consent hadn't been quite organised. There's certain things that meant that we couldn't vaccinate everybody, but we've since picked up most of them, and there's only a few outliers now. So I think we've probably done about 1,800 residents. And we also did the staff as well. As many staff as we could were called into the homes and such like to try and make sure we didn't waste any vaccine as well. Because, of course, it's a very precious resource. So and you can only move this Pfizer vaccine once. So once it's in the home, you've got to use it. So the care homes were very supportive of us in getting their staff in as well. So we've managed to do an awful lot of the staff as well. And other frontline workers. So say we had a vaccine left at the end of a care home, we would call around the local practices and try and get frontline workers in as well. So
what have you learned?
Hard work.
Yes. What have you learned, Jane, about getting your ducks in a row for this end of things, where it really is about the most vulnerable and you want it to be done comprehensively and you want it to be done quickly? What did you learn? Were the hiccups that you managed either to avoid or to get around?
You've got to have a team doing everything and communicating very well with each other. Hiccups we had was when the communication broke down for whatever reason. Like if perhaps the consent wasn't organised in a home, if we couldn't find, there wasn't so much, because we were very organised. If as long as you have a team to rely on that you could call on, say, we need this, we need that, this has gone wrong, what do we do about this? As long as there's that supportive teamwork going on, then I think it's quite possible.
Jane, thank you.
Some of the problems we did have was the IT, though. You did mention about, I heard you talking about your IT system. We had an administrator who had to input the data on site. That sometimes is a problem, because obviously if you can't get that data on immediately, sometimes you might potentially lose that information. But we had strategies in place to avoid that happening, but the IT system has been struggling a little bit because of the vast number of vaccines that have been given in the UK over the last few weeks.
Jane, I so appreciate your time and your experience. Thank you. Dr. Jane Carman, Clinical Director of Inner West Primary Care Network.